Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. Today I'm here with Martin Lucas, and Martin is an ex-veteran. He's worked in all sorts of interesting places, including Google and a range of other things. He's also an entrepreneur. He's built three companies, and he's busy working on something very interesting. But I'll let Martin explain a bit more about how he gets to be here today.
Yeah, thanks, Roy. It's exciting to be on. So yeah, as you mentioned, my background, to use my mum's language, I had a real job in my 20s and then became self-employed at the end of my 20s. I've had three businesses, I've published five books. But the common thing about everything I've always done is trying to understand why humans do what they do. So my skill is mathematical logic, which is problem solving, but I've always applied it to the mathematics of humans, of thought, of doing, of behavior. That's what my passion is.
So let's go back. Yeah, that's your real job. What was your real job?
I worked in telecoms, so a lot of conferencing and collaboration and Microsoft Teams back in the day and WebEx before Cisco bought it, that type of stuff. So lots of group communications, so still a human heartbeat to it.
Yeah, and then I always love asking this question. You started out, you were in the 9-to-5 real job kind of shit. Yeah, I've been there as well. And you had that decision in your mind, I've got a problem that I've seen in the world and I can go out and solve it. And you decided to take that step into the entrepreneurial world. Tell me about that. What was the first business you started and why?
So I started the sales training and sales psychology business. So I kept running into I left large enterprise because I was the problem, right? In that typical entrepreneur way, I didn't want to keep getting told what to do. I kept finding gaps in what I thought was opportunities and the way stuff was done. So I started out by doing sales training and sales psychology and growth type activities for businesses. That was the first business that I did. And then the second one was building a social network that nobody's heard of. So that was my learning lesson. And then the third one was what I'm doing now, Gap in the Matrix.
And that's so important, right? We were just talking before, and we are, the summation of all the lessons we've learned, aren't we?
Yeah, is wisdom not anything more than revisionist history? Like you've got to, if you're open to learn by your mistakes, I believe there's more value in mistakes and certainly trying than there is in focusing too much on what worked, in my opinion.
Have you ever read Matthew Ed's book, Black Box Thinking?
Yes.
Yeah. I really love that. And I often irritate the people around me because I'm like, okay, bring me the failure because the failure is where I learn. I was working in an IT company in 1997, and I worked there for 5 years before I started my first IT company in 2002. And I learned more about what not to do in that 5 years than I ever could have learned in school.
No, I get it.
What lessons have you come away with that have been formative in your journey, so to speak?
The biggest one is what I've done over the past decade after plus 20 years of theories and experimentation before that, but the past 10 years really doubling down on it, is trying to understand why don't humans understand each other, right? Such a simple basis.
I love that.
But like when I started in 2015, there's only been a 0.04% shift in this stat. 98.81% of ads get ignored. And I don't mean looked at and not clicked or clicked and not bought, completely ignored. That's Google Display, Facebook, programmatic. And that has only shifted 0.04%. So this idea that technology and we can't keep up with everything and automation and all those different things, are there more tools in the world? Absolutely. Is there 10,000 more noise because of AI in 2025 than there was a year ago? 100%. But the reality is that nothing is really shifting anything that much. because we still don't understand each other. And it's not just advertising, it's every experience. It's the same type of challenge. So that's a thing that's always fascinated me, because I've also had to learn what I don't know about myself and what I didn't know about other humans. It's almost like you have to go through a grieving process to then be reborn to understand how others think and operate.
I love that. One of the big lessons that I learned with AI is a communication one. Yeah, mm-hmm. I started using ChatGPT when it came out, and yeah, I was like, okay, this is going to be great. And I'd talk to it, I'd say what I needed to say with it, and it would give me basically shit back. Yeah, and slowly but surely, I got to understand that actually I was not communicating correctly. I wasn't being clear. I wasn't being concise. I wasn't being very definitive about what I wanted. And it taught me, you know, the process of going through this has actually taught me how to communicate better with my loved ones and my family and my staff. And yeah, I think so that communication piece is super important. What do you think are the main challenges with people communicating at the moment?
I think it's a fundamental issue that's always been there since the very dawn of humanity, which is we don't listen. And that is getting even harder in an oversaturated world where my wife and I can barely decide a TV show to watch. And when we put it on, we're only watching it for 5 or 10 minutes. And that's not been us, right? But this is what happens when your brain's getting compounded with so much stuff and so much short form stuff that you have less focus with it. But it comes back to the ability to listen. And an example of that is that I can't watch something. I can't listen to a TV show, right? So if that has been diminished, in the modern world, it's even more difficult to take the time to actually hear what others are saying. So it's always been listening, but now it's even getting more difficult for people.
Yeah, we listen to answer, don't we? We don't listen to understand.
Yeah, it's a great example because we're in such a polarized world. If you look at politics and how divided things are now, it's much more polarized, right? So we want to hear more of an echo chamber. We want to hear more of what we believe to already be the case, what we believe to be the truth, what we believe to be our reality. So that compounds and gets worse and worse. And it's not that I'm anti-tech or anti-digital at all. I'm just saying that there's cause and effect causing listening and our want to listen to be taken away even further.
And that's one of the other challenges with AI that I found, and it leaves me into it. And for sure, the AI is generated on the human experience, right? The large language models, as we look at them today, this is how humans are, and therefore, this is how I'm going to be, right? And it's learning along those lines. And AI, general language, large language models, are just yes men. Yeah, they will tell you what you want to hear. Yeah, to the point, you'll talk a bit about hallucinations and things, and I'm super interested to hear about that. But I go to ChatGPT and I say, ChatGPT, I've got this great idea. I'm going to start a car dealership on this road full of car dealerships. Yeah, and it's going to be great because, and I give it some kind of context. ChatGPT will come back to me and say, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's build out the program for you. Let's build out the plan. But if I go back into ChatGPT and I say, actually, now I want you to be my critical thinking partner. I want you to analyze the actual market correctly. I want you to analyze what I'm missing here. I get a totally different answer, right? And people are not understanding that. And then they go and try these things. They go and try this marketing play. And suddenly it's, okay, nothing's working. Why is it? ChatGPT told me it would work. We have to keep our thought leadership. We have to actually use the tool in the right way. And I think this is part of what you're doing, is the work that you've done to create your new AI model. Let's just talk about your new company. And you were telling me some amazing figures about the last 10 years where the work that came in. Just give us some of those.
Yeah, so I began by, as I said, the problem statement of why don't humans understand humans, right? And then I had two problem statements underneath. It was, how does decision-making work? Like, how does it work in the brain? How do we process information? How does all that work? And the other part was, what is emotional intelligence? Because emotional intelligence is the most misunderstood, undervalued part of the human experience, because it's literally how you're reading my micro expressions. 70% of communication comes from the expressions that we make, whether you're understanding how I feel, taking the time to do it. That's the type of listening, right? It's like my understanding of you. If you think about your consumer experience, and the problem I wanted to solve is, you could have a brand that you absolutely love, but all it's doing is sending you discounts or sending you products that you're not interested in, or a product you are interested in, but you've already got it. Right. So we're in a world where this idea of automation and data science and AI data and stuff like that is completely flawed. So to answer your question about the stats, right, we've done 120 million tests, 3,000 projects, over 100 global brands that we've worked with, and we've always managed to hit a minimum of 76% above the industry for marketing metrics, KPIs, saving money, making money, all of that. And the reason being is that we understand the context of the people that you're serving and what's relevant to them. And that also means that you might be a person that you've got a brand that you love, but you only shop with them once every 3 months. If you're not appearing online to that brand, they panic. They classify you as a lapsed customer, and you could be the biggest VIP, most dedicated customer. And then they start sending you discounts and they end up pushing you further away. That's the biggest problem that we're solving, is like this assumption that a data and purchase is a truth about how a customer feels about you or their persona.
You're talking there about emotional intelligence. Let's dig into that a little bit more, because that's an interesting, some of the stuff you're talking about there, NLP, Dale Carnegie, all of these type of things. I've done a fair amount of that.
Yeah.
And so how would you classify emotional intelligence in the work that you do?
So emotional intelligence is very much about how we feel, right? So if I'm a consumer, how do I feel about a brand? I've got a relationship with the brand. And what's really cool is one of the things that we figured out is that a relationship that you have with a brand and its products has the same neural pathways as friendship. Literally the same, right? So how you feel about a brand. So if you think of a brand, like I give Diesel as an example, right? Used to love them, stopped buying from them completely, couldn't explain to you why, just realized years later. Right. That's a typical example. I lost my relationship with them. I stopped wanting to hang out with them. I can't tell you why we're not friends. We're just not friends anymore. Right. That's a big part about emotional intelligence. If you can understand the person's relationship to your brand, you know what to serve them, where to hang out with them, what to give them, what not to give them. So it becomes a nice two-way thing. It's a relationship. That's what emotional intelligence is.
Now you've built out this entirely new AI system.
Yep.
You were telling me you're coming online today, which is super exciting that we're speaking today. And I'm very excited to see what the next stages are. Tell us a little bit more about that. Tell us a bit more about what you're working on, how you're doing it.
Yeah. So the thing for me was that I didn't start out with trying to do something. I started 10 years ago, right? So I wasn't trying to build AI versus today's AI. I was trying to build software that understood how different people made decisions so you could serve them differently, right? In any type of market and scenario. And fast forward to today, we've built our own AI system, but unlike large language models, which are really accelerated text systems, right? They select the best text, as you said, based on the art of the prompt. How specific I communicate is going to be what it's going to select. Unfortunately, as you said, it is set up to be a bit too cowtailed. So it's going to give you more of a positive affirmation no matter what you're asking, right? But it's doing a text selection service. What we've done instead is said, if we can understand each person's context, we know what's relevant to them. Therefore, we know what to write to them about, what call to action to give them, what the timing should be, what product or service to offer them. And all those things mean that you're treating people the way that they want to be treated. And it's no, there's no invasive data, no third-party data. Like at the end of the day, Roy, if I'm selling you sunglasses, why do I have to care that you're looking at blue cars? That was my whole thing, was like, I didn't like invasive data, but it doesn't work. All this cookie stuff doesn't work, or you wouldn't get 98.81% of ads ignored. So that's ultimately what it comes down to. It's an AI system that understands context and relevance, and therefore knows specifically how to write using emotions, using psychology, using the right types of products, the right selection, the right timing. It's kind of like the fable of what marketing's always been selling itself as, but about an individual, and if I'm honest, real.
Sounds amazing. Let's go back a bit, because I want to dig into your entrepreneurial journey and some of the things that are close to my heart. And firstly, just general AI. I get the feeling, and this might be wrong, that you're irritated and stepping away from it. But do you still use it in your day-to-day? Are you still using AI for automation for things like this? Or are you building your own?
We've got our own automation within our system. We still plug into all the major large language models because it helps us learn what they don't know, right? Because they're continuous, large, data models that they're training, but the word intelligence has been falsified in what current artificial intelligence is, right? Because if it was intelligent, it would be able to take your question, reason with it, and understand what you want, right? Instead, it's getting 52% of its answers from Reddit, right? Which means it's like search back in the day, but it's got no, like, it's all well and good having the search algorithm, right? The ranking system, page ranking system that Google created, right? That's great for search. What's different is when a human's putting in something about how they feel, something they need, something about market, something about their audience, and they're getting a answer, not an answer that's gone through any kind of reasoning, consideration, truth checks, or anything like that, right? That's my challenge about AI today.
And what do you see the place of such a open, massive market that's really influencing almost every aspect of our life at the moment? So for example, after this podcast, I'll take this podcast, I'll dump it into my workflow, and it'll go all the way through to the launch. So for me, it's super important to actually look at the problem you're trying to solve in business, and then automate that in the best way possible. And such a big challenge with this is that business owners don't necessarily know what the problems are. Secondly, they don't know what their SOPs are. They don't know what their standard operating procedures are. And especially if you've got 10 or 15 people, you've just started out or you've been growing for a while, you'll be doing the things that you like doing the most, and you'll be ignoring the things that you don't really like doing and hoping they'll go away. And this is where the business operating systems, have you heard of EOS or 90 or all these kind of tools? That's one of the things I coach in, is a business operating system from 90. And it's so interesting to me how so many big companies, 5, 10, 15, not big, 5, 10, 20, 15 million pound companies, don't even have the business operating system worked out and understanding where they're going. And I think the amalgamation of AI with a business operating system can really help you get much more clarity in what you're doing. And for me, I was running two IT companies at once, and I got the opportunity to acquire the first one I worked for. And I just didn't have the time. I was doing 15 hours a day, every day, 7 days a week, and really pushing forward. And that's okay in a growth phase. And we just spoke about that. But companies, we birth a company, right? So, but companies are our baby. We have an idea. We're gonna help the world. We're gonna solve the problems, and we birth a company. And as we birth this company, first of all, it goes through the first stages where it keeps you up all night for sure, right? And then it goes to the next stage where it's the terrible twos and you don't know what to do with it. Then it goes up to early teens, and you really have to understand it wants to be free, but it isn't. And you have to keep control. And I think so many business owners get stuck in that teenage era where they have to be there to hold the hand of the company. Otherwise, it doesn't do the job. And for me, a business operating system takes it to the next level where you can go and travel. You can take 2 weeks off. You can do, what you want to do in life. And I live that life now, right? I've just been in Egypt for 2 weeks and been in France. I'm now in the US and working remotely. It's great. It allows us to do a bunch of things. But having the confidence that my company's set up and running properly is so important. How have you found that process through your multiple businesses?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing because there's a clear delineation, right? Where you've got something that is a fixed process that you can and should automate, that's what people are generally not doing, right? Which is crazy. Exactly what you said. What they should be doing, they should be focusing on that. Why do they not? Because it doesn't look like growth. It doesn't look fun. It doesn't look shiny. It's not the CEO that I've found in a lot of enterprises and in small businesses saying, AI's here, we should do 10 times the amount of content. Nobody's saying, well, the content we're doing is not working. So if we do 10 times the amount of it, what difference does it make? When you focus on those processes, that's where automation works, right? On the other side, as I mentioned with the shiny stars, there's a difference between process automation and agentic AI. And agentic AI is the next thing that people are getting excited about, but it's got the same fail points as traditional AI does right now, because even though a process automation is you do these things, right? I need you to do these things, send this invoice, do this, right? It's straightforward. There is no gaps with that, right? Whereas agentic looks the same, But what is AI following the same steps? But per what you said earlier, in the same way that you can ask a question in a slightly different way, MIT has already proven that the same issue exists in agentic AI, where it starts making mistakes after the seventh or eighth run. It starts doing things inconsistent.
Yeah, yeah.
But focusing on that process stuff, you could argue, why didn't we do that in the software days before AI came? It's the same issue. It's like we're not doing ourselves any favor to take away the stuff we don't like, which is crazy. But the vast majority of people that I know, that whether they're running businesses, senior leadership, whatever it is, they spend the vast majority of their time doing stuff they don't like, and also stuff that's got nothing to do with their job. Admin, expenses, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's, to me, that's the power of AI as it stands at the moment, right? Yeah, it can automate all of this kind of stuff, much as we could have done years ago. However, there's that missing link in the middle, right? You need to understand your business and you need to understand those processes. And,
yeah.
And I think, yeah, when you start a business, you start and you hire Mary, your friend, and you hire John and you hire Bob, yeah, and you get them in because you like them and they're good in one area. So you give them that area to do and they do okay, but that's not their full job. So they start doing other stuff. And as they're doing the other stuff, you lose track of what they're doing. One of the things in the Boss Up is the coaching thing that I do. One of the things in the Boss Up is knowing what the roles and responsibilities are. Yeah, because as an entrepreneur, I will do everything. I've always prided myself in doing everything in the company, being able to do everything. I don't do it all very well, but I know how to do it all. And then I'll ask somebody else to do it, right? And when I ask somebody else to do it, I'm sitting there saying, okay, just go and do this. But I don't give them very clear roles and responsibilities. I don't give them the SOPs for everything. I don't give it to them in such a clear way that there's no possible way for them to actually get it. So I'm failing initially as a business owner because I've not given the role to the person correctly. And then the person, yeah, doesn't necessarily understand the role. So they're not understanding the role. They're not doing it correctly. And I'm looking at them and saying, what's wrong with you? Yeah, it's not them. It's me. Yeah. And
it's the same core, right? It's the same core issue, if you think about it, how well you do or don't communicate to AI,
yeah,
right, is the same way that you lead people, the same way you put in processes or not, right? But the scary thing is, like, you can put the same thing into AI twice. You get the positive response, even though one is much more depth and one's light, per the example you gave. You can get the same thing as a leader. Go and do this. Go and do this in detail. You get the same positive response. You think it's working. One of them gets you a very successful outcome. The other one doesn't.
Yeah.
That's where humans trick themselves. It comes back to communication, listening to how we communicate and so forth.
100%, 100%. And yeah, it's this journey of discovering ourselves is so important, right? Yeah, this journey of actually understanding our own failings, accepting them, acknowledging them and saying, listen, I'm actually not very good at that. I need to go and learn some more. I need to go and understand a bit more about this. And what I typically do is I discover business owners are generally overstressed. They're massively overstressed. They don't have time. And so few people are actually engaging AI because of this reason of they put some things in there and they've got some rubbish out. Right. Yeah. So it's okay. So let's think about this. Let me give you some time back. So I'll typically start and I'll say, what are your top three problems at the moment? Yeah. I'll take those top three problems and say, let's solve those. Let's solve those under the structure of BOS. Now, once I've solved those, now they've got some time. Then I'm going to flip into the next piece. Then I get them to work on their wellness. Right? Because I don't know where you are on your journey, but for me, wellness is the main thing for you to succeed properly as a business owner. Yeah, if your mental state is good, if your physical state is good, if you're not worrying about the future, not worrying about the past, then today you can actually make profit. If your mental state isn't good and you're worrying about these things, you give away your energy to the future, give away your energy to the past, and you spend 40% of your day doing what you need to and 60% worrying. So how have you managed this? What's your routine for wellness? What's your routine for making sure your mind is always in top form?
The science side of it, again, what I've learned over the past decade is so much about self, because you can't model how the brain thinks without understanding it from your own perspective. And I've come across a thing that is, I call it polar opposites, right? But basically, for every good, there is a bad, right? So in the same way, if you're feeling anxious, it narrows your thinking. Therefore, it narrows your decision-making. It narrows the results that you get, right? Whereas when you're feeling calm and relaxed, you're not anxious, your mind's open, you can deal with things a lot easier, you can process more information, you find more success. So wellness and everything that people fight in a busy world is actually the solution to create a less busy world, but nobody thinks they have time for it. You know what I mean? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
And that's been a hard thing for me because I've got a busy mind and I want to be busy. So learning how to give away control is one of the biggest human issues, right? Is, as you said, we can have a very successful business, but it doesn't grow beyond a certain point. Or we recruit many versions of ourselves, which doesn't help because they're just many versions of us. And then we end up saying, I can do it better than what you're doing, so I'll just take over again. Yeah. And they just don't increase beyond the stuff that we're not good at. So it's all combinations of that. Wellness and self-awareness are very much the keys to entrepreneurship, in my opinion. They're a key to happy life, and one follows the other. It's like that infinity loop.
And have you, some of the things, in 2021, I started doing Wim Hof. And Wim Hof is cold exposure and breath work. And I'd never looked at wellness before this, right? Yeah, got myself into, I'd bought an adventure center, and this adventure center was everything I wanted. I had the three IT companies and I'd bought the adventure center. It said indoor skydiving and indoor surfing, climbing, and a jump off of a 130-foot tower with a rappeller and a gym. And it was everything that I could have wanted. And then COVID hit. Right. And that was just a journey into the depths of my soul.
Right.
And as an entrepreneur, I had this inane belief, this total belief that I could actually solve any problem. Yeah. I've always been able to solve any problem, but I couldn't solve the government closing us down. So I just threw money at it. I lost millions of pounds. And, and I ended up getting up one morning at 4 in the morning, climbing up the 130-foot tower, getting ready to jump off. So I had enough. And I sat up there, and luckily I'd been doing the Wim Hof work before this. So I started doing some breath work when I was up there. And that breath work, just the three rounds of breath work, was enough to quiet my mind, to get me to say, actually, I don't need to do this. I can take the next step tomorrow. And then the second thing was something from Dale Carnegie I learned, accepting the worst case scenario. And so now in my mind, the worst case scenario was going bankrupt.
Right.
So I was like, okay, so I'm bankrupt. And you know, when I actually truly accepted that, the weight just lifted, right? It just lifted. And I went down, I signed up for a Wim Hof course and paid for it with the last bit of money I had from the instructor's course. And I called my mom up and I said, listen, I might need a place to stay. Can I come and stay in your spare room? Because it's all going wrong.
Yeah.
And then every day, I just did the maximum amount of work I could every day to make it better. So now we come back 3 or 4 years later. And I've got a totally different life, which is awesome because I'm loving what I'm doing. And that piece of not understanding the tools that are there, the breath work, the meditation, the cold exposure, what are the things that we can do ourselves as business owners, as entrepreneurs, that don't take a huge amount of time? I get up early in the morning. I'm an early riser. This morning I got up, I did my breath work, I did my meditation, 20 minutes of breath work, half an hour meditation, a little bit of PT, jump in my ice bath. Takes me an hour and I'm ready for the day, right? I'm ready for the day.
Yeah.
I wipe away all those emotions from yesterday and I give myself clarity today. And I think that's such a missing piece in what entrepreneurs have today. They don't put themselves first and give themselves the best opportunity.
I completely agree with you. I've got two versions straight back at you that I do. One is, I call it the Dr. Pepper rule because they used to have a tagline of what's the worst that can happen. So that's my version of that is what's the worst that can happen, right?
Yeah.
And I've trained myself over the years with that. So now it's not a negative anymore. It's actually a positive energy situation, which is a big thing about the dynamics, about decision-making and how you feel about things and how you interpret things in terms of the glass half full, the glass half empty. We are what we think. So when we put in more positive energy based on a scenario, the better we feel, the more that we can control it in the best possible way. Positive versus negative energy is literally a choice. It's just how we perceive life. And then the thing that I've learned for breathing, so in line with what you're speaking about, so I'm agreeing with that, first of all, there's a thing that you can do really short term, which the military do, the SAS do it, which is called box breathing, where you breathe in for 7 seconds, you hold it, and then you breathe out for 7 seconds, you hold it. And what that actually does is it resets your nervous system. So it actually brings you down. I'm agreeing with you about meditation and putting a lot of time into breathing first thing in the morning, things like that. But if you're caught in a moment, box breathing allows you just to reset so you can just see reality and just give yourself a break as well. So I'm in complete agreement with you.
Yeah, and yeah, the thing that have you tried Wim Hof breathing?
No, don't know it.
Maybe I'll share some of that with you. It's such a powerful tool. It was initially Tummo breathing, and then Wim came along and he changed it up and made it a bit more of today. I love shortcuts. I love shortcuts in the journey. Yeah, and the two shortcuts that I've found the most useful, I could not meditate. My mind is too busy, right? Yeah, my mind is just crazy busy. But yeah. And now, yeah, then I started Wim Hof breathing, and then I started meditating. And after 20 minutes of Wim Hof breathing, my mind is clear. That 20 minutes, I don't think about stuff. And then I'm able to meditate. And I've been doing Joe Dispenza's work. I don't know if you know his work.
I don't know.
If you don't know his work, go and have a look at Becoming Supernaturals. It's a book of his. Okay. So powerful because he's actually doing the science behind it. Right. Yeah.
Oh,
it's not that we go and sit in the mountain and lock yourself in a cave. He's actually saying, if you meditate, this is how you meditate. This is why you meditate. This is how the cells move. This is the vibration that you're talking. This is how the energy works. And I just found it fascinating. I've been to four of his retreats so far in the last couple of years, and I'm going to another one in February. And what this allows me to do by stacking these tools that I've got that work for me, and not everyone's going to resonate with everything, for sure.
Yeah.
By stacking these tools that work for me, I can just be the best person that I can be today. And
yeah, exactly.
I can enjoy my life. I can live the life I love. And I think so many times we get in. Why do we become entrepreneurs? That's the question. Why did you become an entrepreneur? Apart from being unemployable, which I agree, I'm not either.
But that's that in itself, right? Like I didn't want to answer to somebody else. I wanted to feel that sense of freedom. But I think what
freedom,
you're getting at,
freedom, freedom,
that,
freedom.
Right? We then steal it from ourselves because we box ourselves in with busyness, with this perception, with not enough money, not enough concrete, like that kind of stuff, right? So we become our own enemies or frenemies of the thing we set out to do in the first place. That's the risk, I think, right?
Yeah, we go into it for freedom and we build ourselves a cage, right?
Hey, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we totally build ourselves a cage and then we lock ourselves in and we make these walls. And they don't need to be there. They really don't need to be there. If you do everything in the correct way, they don't need to be there at all. And yeah, I'm lucky. I'm so grateful for the life I'm living at the moment. Partially, I don't value money as much. And what I mean by that is I would rather go and spend 2 weeks freediving in Egypt with dolphins than have that money in the bank. I can't. I used to pride myself on seeing where the world was going to be in 5 years' time. Yeah. And seeing, being able to plan and structure on that. Honestly, now with the current state of the world, I have no idea where it's going to be in 3 months.
Yeah, I get you.
So, this idea of live your life today, right? This is all we've got. Yeah, I was, just a little story. I was 19 years old in South Africa. I had an argument with my wife, or my future wife, my girlfriend at that point, and I decided to just leave. So I hitchhiked out from where we were, and I was just leaving home, right? I didn't know where I was going. I was just full of testosterone and all those things that you are at 19. And I was hitchhiking on the motorway. And I got to the top of this hill called Fields Hill, and literally hitting, and I heard this noise behind me, turned around, and this Mercedes-Benz, the driver had fallen asleep at the wheel. And he pulled across the road. He hit my shin, broke my leg in two places. Well, my foot fell off. Yeah, I went through the windscreen, as you can see here. I went over, flipped around the mirror, the side mirror, and then was thrown into the road. And I lay there, still conscious. I lay there with cars zipping past me. And these two amazing Samaritans stopped. They saw the whole thing. And they pulled me onto the white line and stood at my head and my feet so that the cars wouldn't hit me. And as I was laying there, all I regretted was what I hadn't done, not what I had done. Right.
Nice.
I just had, and what a blessing at 19 years old, to be able to come out of that and say, you know what? I've got today to do the things I want to do. And since then, I've done 2,500 skydives. I've done 700 scuba dives. I've done free diving all around the world. I've jumped into glacial lagoons. And those aren't things for everybody. But the point is, maybe it's going and telling your mom you love her. Maybe it's going and spending time with your family. You don't have a huge amount of anything else. You've only got now. And we lose sight of the important things when we start running a business and it starts owning us.
Yeah, I agree. I, in line with what you were saying about, I love to find out the shortcut, the logic of how something works, right? What's behind the science? What's the truth of it, right? And the thing that I'm working on away from the business side, so like just pure academic passion study, like what I've always done my whole life, is like, what's the energy of life? And what I mean by that is what we can actually manage, right? So your perception, luckily enough, when you were 19, or perhaps because you how you were raised or who you were, or nature, nurture, all that kind of stuff, your perception was what can I do, not what have I done, right? What can I do? What am I missing out on? And that's literally for me is like the energy of life and how the physics of decision making works and how energy comes into the body is very much that classic phrase of perception is reality. The more you can manage how you perceive something, the more positive energy comes into your system. The more positive energy you've got, the more healthy your decision making becomes. The healthier decision making comes, the more positive energy. You see what I mean? It becomes its own self-fulfilling, most beautiful thing that means that you're positively controlling the energy of life. Not I'm pretending to be the happiest person in the world. It's more that balance and contentment. You get me?
100%, and there's so many things now. I'm gonna go a little bit off script now because I love what you're saying there. One of the things that started coming to me when I started doing Wim Hof workshops. So if you imagine there's 30 people laying in a room and we're doing breath work, and I started perceiving the energy of the room. I could literally
Right.
walk to the person that's gonna go and cry next. Because with Wim Hof breathing, you end up, a lot of people have four or five people on every session will have an emotional release, right? Because
Yeah.
we move things. And it's just really drawn me down this path of what is energy? Yeah, we're not just meat. We're energy. Yeah, and
Yeah.
Spencer talks about this a lot. And I've actually been doing quite a lot of work with psilocybin recently.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It really is fascinating. Yeah, and just how this opens you up and lets you rewire your brain, do things that you never thought would be possible before. It takes all those blocks and moves them away. And this is an area that I'm going to be going into a bit more and understanding a bit more and learning about a bit more. And so much of what we do, we get stuck in now. We get stuck in, actually, we don't get stuck in now. We get stuck in the past, right?
Yeah.
We get locked into the past of these emotions. So yeah, I think energy is, yeah, if you can bring that positive energy, 100% agree with you.
Yeah, and it comes back to what I said about the I'd love people to that listen to this have a takeaway about this polar opposite stuff, right? So positive and negative energy is just how we perceive things. The biggest issue, similar to this, of why humans find it difficult to be content and to be present, is that the human brain is either thinking about the past or worrying about the future. It's actually against its nature to sit with the now, right? It wants to be thinking about one or the other, right? Whereas actually what you want is balance. It comes back to the same thing. And the other thing to be aware of for people is like, we're addictive creatures by nature, right? And we can get addicted to negative as much as we can get addicted to positive, right? So
100%.
even in abusive, horrible, negative situations, we get a chemical release that means that we can get addicted to that as much as we could get addicted to having a happy, joyful life. Now, obviously, one serves you a lot better than the other, but if you're not in control of it, you're not in control of your choices. I call it choice architecture. So, what do you want to be addicted to? Stuff you enjoy or stuff that you don't? Because you're going to get addicted to one or the other.
And to that point, your mind and your body are very, or your mind is very much an engine to save energy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a prediction engine to save energy. And as you're saying, we have the sympathetic mode and the parasympathetic mode. And the parasympathetic mode is your rest and digest. The sympathetic mode is I'm being chased by a saber-tooth tiger. I need to deal. And the parasympathetic mode allows us to be creative. And this is where the work happens. This is where growth happens. This is all these things. And the sympathetic mode, we're just fight and flight. We're just getting out of the situation now. And to your point, one of the things that I've learned, the human mind is so powerful, unlike anything else in the animal kingdom, because we have a thought and we don't know whether we're in the activity or whether we're having a thought. The mind can't tell the difference. So
Right.
you go out and you get almost run over by a car, to use a point. And you have that the chemicals that are released from your mind into your body are there to protect you. It's adrenaline, it's all those things that, I don't know, something like 1,000 chemicals get released when something like that happens. And they go into your system, right? And they go into your system, and when they're in your system, you feel a bit better. So you're a step up from what that situation may be. It's giving you the thing. But then you just have a thought about that thing again. You go home and you think about it again, and you have those chemicals again. And you keep thinking about it, and you have those chemicals. And to your point, that's where the addiction starts happening. Your body's okay. If I keep thinking about it, I'm going to keep on getting these chemicals, and it's going to make me feel a little bit better because I'm worried about that thing. And it's understanding those blocks and understanding what's happening there that's so important. And because there are chemicals coming into the body, those chemicals are layering on top of them each other or on top of themselves, and they come down and they sit in your fascia. And the breath work actually allows you to clear some of those chemicals. And for me, the breath work is this ability every morning to come in and to wipe out the chemicals from yesterday. And it feels like that. It really feels like that. I've got 15, 20 business owner clients, probably a lot more than that, actually. I teach breath work at Cranfield University to high performing business owners. And it's fascinating to see these people come in, with no concept of how powerful breath work actually is and leave thinking, wow, I actually feel totally different from what I did before. Just 20 minutes a day, just 20 minutes a day of this breath work can make such a difference. If you could get 20% of your energy and your focus back in the day, would that be worth it? And by doing 20 minutes in
Definitely.
the morning, that can do it. I'll share it with you afterwards. And so, 100% agree. If we understand our mind, if we understand how it works, and we understand when we're good and when we're not so good, when we're productive and not so productive, then we can use it and we can actually move forward.
Yeah, I agree. And then taking it back to the tech side, until AI understands what you just said, it's not intelligent.
I don't think AI is going to be intelligent. I believe the opportunity with AI is a different one, that a lot of people are seeing. I believe that if we can automate those things that need to be automated, and that gives us more time, and we can then bring more human into the organization, those are the organizations that are going to take an entire leap forward to what you're building. If we can actually bring the human back. Because the human's gone away through COVID, through all these things we've been through, we're getting more disconnected and more disconnected. If we can get that connection back, then we're going to stand out. And the problem being that unless you use AI, unless you use the automations, unless you do the run-of-the-mill basic tasks that you don't need to do by automation, you're not going to have the time to be more human.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. I believe that more and more you're going to see, whether humans are aware of it or not, they're going to start pushing for more human to human connection, more real. It's why podcasts, I believe, are taking off even further than what they were, because you can't, like, people are trying to, but you can't fake it. You can't fake an interaction like this. You can't fake the tone. You can't fake the emotional context of it. It's not as preloaded as everything else. So that's where I think people start pushing more towards. Obviously, if it's more short form, they'll be happier because we can't think and can't listen.
For sure.
Joking,
These longer ones get a little bit challenging for them. So we'll cut them down into small pieces.
right?
So, what's the next steps? Let's think about wrapping up now. What's the next steps for you? And I'd love for you to come back on again in 3 months' time, and when you're up and running, and just give us an update of how it's going. But what are your next steps?
I'd love to do that. So thank you, first of all. The reality is that now that once the engine goes fully online, which is still hard for me to believe, right? 120 million tests, 10 and a half years of work. Once it's online, I can then start putting out self-serve platforms to the world. And my belief is that people don't want general bots. They want something that serves a purpose, right? Solving a process, or I'm on here because I need writing, or I'm on here because I need to understand my audience. So it's less about everyone, not the layman generally doesn't want to understand using this word in front of this word completely changes the outcome, right? They want to get the output of the problem they're trying to solve with a little bit of free text, right? That's what I believe. Let's see, in 3 months, I'll know whether I'm right or not. So I'll be able to tell you and be honest about it, right? See what I've learned, what lessons are there.
Looking forward to it. One last question. Anybody going on to this entrepreneurial journey, what would you tell them?
Understand yourself. Understand what self-confidence is and research what it is you think you want to do before you start it.
Ajay, thank you very much for joining me, Martin. And I will put all your details below so people can get a hold of you. And we look forward to
Awesome.
seeing you again in the near future.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks for listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power. Our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.